Okay, tonight in our continuation of our learning and going through groundbreaking tshuvot of the last century, we're going to discuss one of the, I can't even say the last century, really the past, 25 or so years has been a really a monumental shift in the, at least the more modern Orthodox community, in the Dati Lumi community as a whole, and that is the topic of Yuatzot Halakha. A little bit of background. Yuatzot Halakha are women who are trained right now through Nishmat. It's a two-year course where they are trained to learn all through Hilchot Nida, right, in Yoredea, Siman Mikuf Pei Gimel, through Siman Reish, okay? And throughout learning through those Simanim, they also go through different training on some of the medical aspects of Hilchot Nida, right, overall reproduction, systems, and also different issues in infertility, different sugyot that come out from that, as well as a lot they go through. They also have training in different aspects of psychology and different things that come up when passing shaylot, specifically in the realm of Hilchot Nida. Overall, it's a two-year course really based out of Nishmat, and now, as of about a little under 10 years ago, Atara Eis started up a program doing training Yotzot in America. So really, Yotzot has been a really groundbreaking project that's run out of Nishmat, and we're going to try and see today what some of the sources have to say about it. Can women paskin shaylot in Hilchot Nida? What exactly is a yoetzet? How does it work? And that's the plan for tonight's discussion. See a wonderful tshuva by Rav Rabinovich about this topic in Shu'at Siach Nachum. This morning, I came back home from Shul, and I checked my phone, and I got in a text message that Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin was nifter this morning. And I had very mixed emotions, because I had planned already tonight we were going to be discussing Yotzot Halakha. And on one hand, it was very... There was this feeling of incredible sadness that Rav Henkin, who him and his wife, Rabbanit Dr. Chana Henkin, really, they were the founders of Nishmat in 1990, and then in 1997, they really opened up and started the Yotzot Halakha program. Really, he was the posek for Nishmat and the Yotzot Halakha with Rabbi Warhaftig for many years. And so on one hand, I was really saddened to hear that he had passed away, for sure, losing a major Talmud Chacham, the author of Shu'at Bnei Banim, and numerous other Svarim, particularly dealing with women's issues, tzniut, equality, things of those nature. Fantastic Talmud Chacham. And he passed, so this morning I was kind of like, it's really upsetting that he's not, that unfortunately he was just nifter when we were planning to learn all about Yotzot tonight. And on the other hand, I felt, what better shir to be Le'ulei Nishmato, Rav Yehuda Herzl, Ben Rav Hillel, right? He was the grandson of Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, the Posek Hador in America, till really the 1950s, and really came from an illustrious family of Rabbanim. So Bezrat Hashem, this shir should be Le'ulei Nishmato for Rav Henkin. This really was arguably his life work once, when he moved from being the rabbi of Beit Shan and the Bika Valley, Bikat Yarden, and he came back to Yerushalayim and really dedicated most of his life to Nishmat and Yotzot Halakha and really the area of Hilchot Nida. So this year should Bezrat Hashem be Ilui Nishmato on the day of his Ptira, and his Levaya was this afternoon. This year really should Bezrat Hashem be Ilui Nishmato, and he should be a Melitz Yosher for us. We're going to shift now into the Tshuva. The Tshuva is written by Rav Nachum Eliezer Rabinovich, who also, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of Gedolim this year, passed away this past May. A little bit about Rav Rabinovich. Rav Rabinovich was born in 1928 in Montreal and passed away this past May in 2020 at the age of 92. He was born in Canada, and there he learned for 8 years in Yeshiva Merkaz HaTorah in Montreal under Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung, who was really one of the Gedolim after the Holocaust, who was in North America. And he learned there for 8 years, where then he got smicha by Rav Hirschsprung. During that time, he got his first degree in commerce. He then went to Baltimore to learn in Ner Yisrael, where he was a Talmud of Rav Ruderman. He ended up marrying Rav Ruderman's niece. And while he was in Baltimore, right, he got his master's in, I believe it's applied mathematics. Or, what was it in? Yeah, and he got his master's in mathematics from John Hopkins. Okay? From there, after he had finished getting smicha from Rav Ruderman, learning in Eretz Yisrael for a while and getting his master's, he was the Rav in Charleston, South Carolina, where he was the Rav of the community, opened a school there, and he was the principal of the school. He taught in the school. One of his friends from Eretz Yisrael came down to visit him in Charleston, and said, oh, he said, oh, I'm teaching today in the local school. Why don't you come? And his friend knew him from Neri Yisrael. He was one of the brightest, best Talmidim in Neri Yisrael. So he was excited to hear shir from his friend, who is this massive Talmud Chacham. And Rav Rabinovich is teaching Aleph Bet to a group of first graders. And his friend comes over to you afterwards like, you could have been a Rosh Yeshiva anywhere, and you're teaching Aleph Bet to first graders in South Carolina. Like, what's going on here? And he was kind of like, I'm teaching Torah. Like, who cares whether it's, you know, giving shir klali in a yeshiva? I'm teaching Aleph Bet. Like, we're like that really didn't matter to him. After that, he left and went to Toronto, where he went and he was a rabbi of community in Toronto for about from 1963 to 1970. And while he was there, he got his PhD from the University of Toronto in philosophy and history of mathematics. His topic of his PhD, which I've said numerous times, if there's like one book that I wish I could read, but I know it was a waste of my time because I won't understand a word of it, it's his PhD thesis that was published. They published it a few years ago for his 90th birthday. They translated it into Hebrew as a birthday present for him from the yeshiva. And so his topic was really about statistical analysis of different, you know, Jewish medieval texts. Really, it's, what was the official title? Probability and Statistical Interference in Ancient and Medieval Jewish Texts. And then he went, after he left Toronto, he was then hired to head Jews College in London, where he was the Rosh Yeshiva for 10 years, after which he then was recruited to come to be the Rosh Yeshiva in Maale Adumim, where he was the Rosh Yeshiva really till he passed away, but already a few years ago he kind of stepped back. He's the author of, his magnum opus is the Yad Pshuta, an incredibly, incredibly expansive and brilliant work on the Rambam, which kind of, the Rambam was his specialty, was really his uniqueness. Many other svarim on the Rambam. And Shailos and Tshuvos Siach Nachum, he wrote a lot more. There's a lot more of his published. Really a fantastic Talmud Chacham who really blended the mastery of sciences and Torah. A lot of his tshuvot, a lot of things. He had a lot of groundbreaking opinions regarding a lot of technology, electricity on Shabbos, uses of different technological appliances, both on Shabbos and Kashrut. A lot of really fascinating tshuvot from Rav Rabinovich. If you want, right after he was Nifter, right after his Levaya, I put up a shir on a little bit of a hesped about Rav Rabinovich. A lot, I could speak about Rav Rabinovich for a long time, but that's a little bit of a hakdama into who Rav Rabinovich was, and we're going to now move into the tshuva. So we're in Shu'ut Siach Nachum, and in Siman Samech. In Siman Samech, Rav Rabinovich discusses Yotzot Halacha, and the question that he's asked is like this. Recently, they've opened up courses to teach, where different Rabbanim are teaching women expansive courses in Hilchot Nida. They're really learning in a comprehensive manner Hilchot Nida. And they're even tested on them, right? They have to take, I don't know what it now currently is, now that, you know, over the past few years since, yeah, no, that I know, but like, since Rav Henkin has been ill, whatnot, I don't know exactly how it works. It used to be you had to take 4 oral bechinas on top of a written test. It's really, it's very serious. I don't know exactly how it works today, right? They have to take tests, and they also learn about the different psychological and medical issues that come up within Hilchot Nida. And these women then are going to be given the title Yotzot Halacha for these women, and then they're able to, for other women out there to come and to address them, to ask them questions, and they are kind of, they're the first response when people have Nida Shailas. They're really there for people to answer, right? They have a 24-hour hotline that's all anonymous. They have their website has lots of Shailas up there. They've put out a lot. They've just published recently like a 90 pages on mikvah and corona and different issues that have come up there. So he wants to know, yeah, and he even says there's some women there who have also who have taken an expertise in marot in ktamim and damim, right, paskining different sugyos in whether or not dam's tar or tameh. Okay, and he says the question then is, can these women, can they actually paskin these shailas in marot damim? Can they paskin shailas in hilchot nida? Are you allowed to call, you know, the hotline, or if you know a yoetza personally, are you allowed to call them and ask them your shaila, or do you have to ask your rav? Right, there's pros and cons obviously to both. That, you know, we can discuss it a little bit later. So let's see his tshuva. So Rav Rabinovich opens off, in general, Rav Rabinovich's tshuva, if I were to like classify it, there's a big difference in the world of tshuvas between the Ashkenazi-style tshuvot and Sephardi-style tshuvot. Rav Rabinovich is as classical of an Ashkenazi posek as you ever find, right? It's very much based off of Gemara Rishonim. He does not get fancy with Achronim, and he almost always he has a mahalach based on the Gemara and the Rishonim, and that's how he paskins, very much based off of a svara from the Gemara. Doesn't bring a lot of sources, really just backs it up, and his tshuvot are very much that way. Always brings you a Gemara, machloket Rishonim, and then kind of tells you what he thinks. more of this tshuva natso, but in a lot of his tshuvot, he also very much is it's Gemara, Rambam, Aruch HaShulchan, what I think. So in this tshuva, it's not so, he doesn't really bring the Rambam and the Aruch HaShulchan, but many of his tshuva really are that way. So he opens off as usual with the Gemara. The Gemara in Yidduch Chaf Amud Bet discusses a question, right? Where a woman then, can a woman come and say, a woman can say, Kazet tiher li ploni chacham, mahu. The Gemara asks a question. Can a woman say, right, let's say you have a question about a mara, and you say, oh, it looks like color X. And can you, and your friend come and say, oh, I asked the rabbi a few months ago, that exact same color, and he said it's fine. What's the din? Is she believed? Can she come and say, I had the exact same case a few weeks ago, or whenever, and the rabbi said it's fine, is she going to be believed? So the Gemara then says, right? Right, Rashi explains, can her friend believe her? Her friend comes and showed her her mara, her ketem, and she says, are you allowed to believe your friend? Okay? Right, and her friend says, oh, I asked, I had the exact same shiloh last month or a few months ago, and he said it's fine. So then the Gemara then continues and says that she's ne'emenet, right? She's totally believed to say that. She's also believed to say, right, if you come to a posek and you say, I saw a mara, but I lost it, right? Let's whatever the example was, right? I lost the mara, I don't know where it went, or it was misplaced, etc. So you're believed to go into, let's say if the rabbi has a color chart on the wall, you could say, I saw exactly this color, this shade of red, and you're believed to say that in a case where, because I don't have anything in front of me, so it's your word or nothing, right? I have no other way to believe it. So you're believed to say that I saw that color and I lost it. The Gemara then says, maybe that's only going to be, so maybe the woman's only believed when there's no mara in front of her. But if you actually have the quote-unquote, you have the evidence, you have the blood, then the woman might not be ne'emenet. Maybe she's not believed. She's only believed to say, oh, that's what I saw, but I don't have any proof. But once you have proof, maybe you lost your ne'emanas. No, if you have the ability to check, then maybe you have a chayev to check. This is going to be questioned in many other areas in halacha. Right? Are you chayev to do a beirur, to be bodek another time? Comes up in Hilchos Kashrus a lot, etc. Things like that. Are you going to have to or not? That's what the Gemara maybe suggested. No. So then we say, so maybe if it's in front of us, we can't believe her. Tashima, Yalta. Then brings the story of Yalta. Yalta.
Yalta is one of my favorite characters.
Awesome. Great. So Yalta, definitely a fascinating character. So she, she brought her nida shaila to Rabbi Baruch Hanna, and he said it's tame. Hadar ita lekame derav Yitzchak berei derav Yehuda. She then took that question and went to the other rabbi. Different discussion, not for now. Can you go rabbi shopping asking multiple rabbis? But the Gemara here, this is really the source for this discussion. So the Gemara then says, well, the reason why she did that is because she'd asked in the past and she knew that this color was tahor. And why'd she ask a second rabbi? Because she'd asked Rabbi Baruch Hanna in the past. He then said, oh, it's Tameh. She said, it's not Tameh. I know for a fact this is Tahor. You've been Metahor this exact color before. And it found out afterwards that he actually had like an eye infection. He had some sort of eye issue that day. And as a result, when she asked the second rabbi, he said, for sure it's Tahor. And that's going to be a discussion on whether or not you can go rabbi shopping. You can ask a second rabbi if you think the first rabbi was mistaken. If you really think that they were incorrect in their assessment of the question or of the Metzias, that is going to be pshat in that case there. Okay? And then the Gemara says at the end of the day, regarding whether or not she's believed or not, Rav Yitzchak bar Yehuda, Agamrei Samach. Okay? And Rashi says, Dipshita le detar, aval ihaya misafke le lo haya samech le. So Rashi's understanding of the sugya is, in a case where the woman says, for sure, 100%, I know this is Tahor, she's believed. But if there's a suffix, I'm not sure. It's kind of like, there's sometimes cases where it's on the gvul. It's a borderline. It could be tahor. It could be tameh. There's reasons to, you could go both ways. There's cases that are not always so clear cut. So in a case where it's clear cut, she's going to be believed. In a case where it's not clear cut, Rashi says if there's a suffix, it's not so poshut. It's a little bit more of a complex shayla. Rashi holds, then she's not going to be believed. Okay? Then Rav Rabinovich brings the Ramban. The Ramban asks a bunch of questions. He says, I don't get it. We're trying to say that the woman is going to be believed in her Nida Shilas. Then why on earth does Yalta go and ask the rabbi? As in, if she knew that it was Tahor. She said, I know for a fact it's Tahor. That's why she went to the second rabbi and said, hey, I know this is Tahor from the past. So why did she then go to Rabbi Baruch Hanna in the first place? That is the question that the Ramban is trying to assess. Once we believe your Ne'emenet, So why are you going to go to the rabbi? Like, what do we benefit by going to the rabbi once you know? So the Ramban brings three answers. The first is that she was not comfortable paskening for herself. The whole discussion is one allowed to pasken their own shilas, particularly in the world of Nida. There's more reason to say maybe it's best not to pasken her own Nida shilas. So if her friend asked her a shila, she paskened for her friends, but for herself, no way. Answer number two. Inami machmir al nafshe. Yalta was really, she was really machmir. She was like really stark, and she was like, no, I know that I'm going to be machmir. And in the world of Hilchot Nida, right, there's a famous line that people like to quote. It's not a chumra in Hilchot Nida, it's a kula on shalom bias. Right? Sometimes when you're going to be machmir in Hilchot Nida, there's going to be trade-off. And that's going to be, right, you're going to push off going to the mikvah for longer, etc. There's going to be fallout on the relationship between man and woman, right? Whatever's going on in the household, etc. The ramifications are high, so she didn't want to. She knew she's generally machmir, so she did not want to pass him for herself because of her chumras. And three, inami mishum kvodan shel chachamim halalu ena roa b'mkoman. Right? Because of kavod chachamim, because of her respect for the local rabbis, she didn't want to pasken shailas. Right? I'm not going to pasken shailas. There's a local rabbi. Right? I know someone who, one of my rabbeim who I very much respect. Actually, I did my chassan classes with him. And I remember he told me, he's like, I did a course in Marot, and you know, I can pasken Marot. So I said, would you? And he said, no, I live in a community where there's numerous, Baruch Hashem, we have numerous poskim who pasken Hilchos Nida. And he said, if I was in a community where no one was pasken Hilchos Nida, fine. But we're in a community where there's three or four other rabbanim who are paskening that people go to, why should I get involved? Not necessarily because of kvodon, but like, right, the idea that there's other people paskening, let them pasken, I don't need to get involved. So Yalta said, because of their kavod, I don't want to get involved. According to this, it would seem to be, for the first two answers, for sure, there's no problem with Yatzor Halacha. Right? If it's because she didn't want to pasken her own shilas, so you have no problem paskening the random person who's calling the hotline, or your neighbor a few blocks down who comes to you with a shila, no problem. If you're going to say, like answer number two, she's going to be not machmir on herself, okay, but to pasken someone else's shila, that's fine. And number three, if it's going to be a problem of kavod tamid chachamim, then maybe the minute you open up this whole organization for yotzer halacha, then it's going to be a problem because you're basically, you just like, the rabbi has what his responsibilities, and you basically just took these 18 simanim of Yoredeya, and he said, oh, those are ours, right? You're going to open up Yotzer Halacha, maybe that's going to be pogea, that's going to offend all the rabbis because you basically just took all of Hilchot Nida away from them. All of the shailas that come up from Hilchot Nida are now not going to be asked to the local rabbanim, and as a result, maybe if we accept the third answer of the Ramban, that is going to be a problem. Okay? Rabinovich then says, based on this though, mitoch dvarav olebe beirosh im lo hayta yalta ba'al lefnei chachamim v'adei hayta rashai lismoch al atzma im hayta b'ducha, right? If Yalta was positive, I know for a fact this is the psak, 100% she's believed. There's no problem. Okay? Except for me, right? Because she knew already from that in the past. Aval chaverta lo ratzta lismoch al atzma mivnei tamim shekata v'ramban. But she didn't want to trust herself. Right? It wasn't that her friend couldn't believe her. It's not like she couldn't paskin for, let's say Yalta couldn't paskin for Sarah. I don't know what her friend's name was. Okay? But, so she couldn't paskin for herself, but for Sarah, there's no problem. And he says, that this seems to come up as in a tour. And also, he says, this is brought down by Rav Bezalel Ranchberg in the Pitchei Nida, right? The turn of the from lived around 1762 or so to like 1820, right? Around the turn of the 19th century. So he also discusses this, and he says, "Aval isha atzma ina tzricha shetavo lechacham." The woman doesn't need to go to the rabbi herself. Yichola lismoch shehu kaze, right? If she knows for a fact this is tahor or it's tameh, right? There's no, she doesn't need to ask the question. And dafka, she only needs to ask when there's a suffix. In any case where it's a clear cut question, bein latahor, bein latameh, you don't need to go to the rabbi. The woman can paskin. Once there's a, I'm not sure, there's this gray area, it could go both ways, when do I factor in other, right? There's lots of other questions, right? Many complex sugyo, damaka, right? Many other questions. Is it a ketem, size of a ketem, gris, right? All these different sugyo that are not necessarily the most simplest, clear-cut, difficult shilas that come up. You have to be tola, then you have sugyos in sveik sveika, how that applies, right? Shas kundra sveik sveika in kuf yud. Lots of different shilas that tie into Hilchos Nida that make it more complex. In that case, the Pitchei Nida says, so then she wouldn't be believed. But in any case where it's a simple shila, it's pretty clear. What's the problem? Okay? And he brings a proof. He says, this fits in exactly what the Rashba's saying, right? The Beis Yosef quotes the Rashba. Rashba, when we deal with Yoredeya, his sefer, Torah Rabayit, right? Torah Rabbeinu Aruch, Torah Rabbeinu Katzar from the Rashba. This is like the Yisod in all Hilchos Yoredeah. The Rashba is the gold standard. So he says, this is what the Rashba is telling us. V'ne'emenet isha lomar kezera iti v'avaretiv. Right? She's believed to say, I saw this and I lost it. The Rashba says that we're not, why is she believed? We don't assume that women lie, right? She had a chazak of a liar, right? She's like known to be a pathological liar, right? She's a bad person. Then maybe she's not ne'emenet, but that would apply across the board. We don't assume that a good kosher woman is going to be nechshav as a, she's not going to be considered as a liar. So that's what the Rashba says. And he says, right, we know that the woman is believed. Why? We have a pasuk that tells us in the Dioraita, in Hilchos Nida, Visafra La, right? We have to count Shivanakim, right? We have to count the 7 days. The Gemara tells us Visafra La'atzma, right? Nowhere does it say when you have to count your 7 days, or the whole discussion in Tosfot, Visafra La, maybe she has to count out loud, or can she count not, right? Comparison between Shivanakim and Nida versus Sfirat Omer. What's the crossover between the word Visafra, right? There's a Tosfot that discusses that. But the Gemara tells us she counts to herself. Never did it say, oh, you have to go tell your husband, hi, husband, it's day one, it's day two, it's day three. Like, that's, no, you don't have to do that. You're believed. Right? Not only that, Gittin, Daf Gimel, we say, right, those that learned Gittin last year, right? Right, what do we say on Daf Gimel? We learn out from women. You learned the Masechta. I assume you got Daf Gimel and Bekiyas on your own at Night Seder, no? Whatever. Okay? So point is, when we learn, right, we learn out for Hilchos Kashrus and Kol Torah Kula, Eid Echa Neman Bisurin. What's the source for Eid Echa Neman Bisurin? That one Eid is going to, one witness is believed for world of Isurin. It's learnt out from Hilchos Nida, right? Woman, we'll derive this entire klal in halacha based off of woman, okay? So why, we can't say that Stam women are going to be liars when we say based off of the woman that they are believed. So that's the opinion of the Rashba. And as a result, the Rashba says, for sure, the woman's going to be believed to say what the case is. But he says, maybe, aval ime viel defaninu dam vachzakinu betame, avilu nistapku betame, ain't some chimala. But in a case where the Rabbi X said it's tame, maybe the woman can't say, no, it's really tahor. Right? If you already have a psak that it's tame, maybe the woman cannot overturn that psak for the Rashba. She can't tell you it's tahor. And B, if there's a suffix, there's this gray area, right? Not literally a gray area, but gray area in the black-white scale, okay? So that's going to be a discussion. Maybe the woman does not have the ability to paskin on sveiko. That's the opinion of the Pitrei Nida and the Rashba. So to sum up so far where we are. Ramban, three answers. Why didn't Yalta paskin for herself? One, maybe she didn't trust, she didn't believe she could paskin for herself. The whole question, can I paskin for myself? Two, she didn't want to be machmir for herself. Three, kavod chachamim. Okay? Naf Kamino for that's going to apply for Yotzer Lacha. And then for the Rashba and the Pitrei Nida, seemingly, she's definitely ne'emenet. We don't believe she's going to lie. There's no reason to assume she's going to lie. We learn all about Visafra Lali Atzma, Eid Echa Ne'eman Bisurin. We believe the woman. We trust the woman. There's no reason to assume otherwise. And thus, for sure, she's believed. But in a case where maybe it's already Tameh, and now she's trying to overturn a pre-existing Pesach, or there's a suffix, it's kind of this gray, not such a clear, it could be Tahor, could be Tameh, then maybe she's not ne'emenet. Okay? Now we continue. This is the sheet of the Ritva and the Me'iri. The Ritva and the Me'iri say, this is really, we're just going to read the Ritva inside, but this is also the opinion of the Me'iri. Okay, he writes in his Chidushim in Masechet Nida. Okay, he says, Kol heicha she'ein hadam lefaneinu, o shehu befaneinu, ve'ein anu ro'im bo shum siman tuma, pshita she'hi ne'emenet ben latma ben lechaverta. In any case, where either A, the kol, the mare, the dam, the piece, the shayla at hand is not in front of us, right? It was lost, or, you know, you had a shayla, you did laundry, or whatever the case was, or whatever, lots of different cases, not going into details when it went, why exactly, what the sugya that could be with, where it was lost, but for whatever question, the blooded question, you flushed it down the toilet, whatever it was, disappeared. So now, in any case, the Ritva and the Me'iri say, any case where the blood is not in front of us, you're automatically ne'emenet. And two, any case where it's a clear-cut case, right? If there's not even a shayla, is it tameh? It's so clear that it's tahor. Then of course she's ne'emenet. But then, right? And he says, you're not only ne'emenet for yourself, but you're ne'emenet also for your friend or for other people, right? You're able to say that, not just for you, but you could paskin that way for your neighbor, your friend, right? The random person who just calls you up online or on the phone and asks you a shayla. V'nire, de kol she'i ne'emenet, ain't tzricha she'tomar tiyar li ploni chacham. V'dayla she'tomar tiyar li chacham. She doesn't even need to say, oh, I asked that child to Rabbi X, and he said it's fine. She could just say, oh, that's Tahor. I know from the Chachamim that it's Tahor. You don't need to even, like, maybe, what's the difference with that? I would have thought if she has to say, oh, I called Rabbi Cohen, and I asked the child of Rabbi Cohen in the past. So then she's not paskining. What's the psak? Oh, I know for a fact that Rabbi Cohen says that's fine. Whereas in the Ritva and the Meir are saying a step further, you could just say, oh, that's fine. You don't need to be tole that every single thing is coming from Rabbi X. That's going to be a very important statement. That's giving her the ability to paskin it more so than just saying, oh, it's from this rabbi. I spoke to this rabbi and he said it's fine. Right? That's taking a step further from the Gemara of Tiher Li Chacham Ploni, but saying, no, Tiher Li Chacham. Right? I know that the halacha says that's mutter. That's tahor. That's the opinion of the Ritva and the Meiri. Okay. He then says, Rav Rabinovich continues. So this is, of course, obviously, that if in theory, if you have a woman who's chashu, that she generally, like, she's a pathological liar, she's a gambler, she's like a drug addict and a crackhead, so maybe then she's not believed. But if you have a normal person who's functioning and generally is a trustworthy person, then of course she's going to be believed. We don't assume, we're not chashu that she's chashu, that she's a liar. He also says, if she trusts that what she's saying is right, and she knows for a fact this is Tahor, that's fine. And also her friends could believe her. And he says, this is pshat in the Mishnah. He says, we're getting fancy here with the Ramban, and the Ritva, and the Meiri, and the Rashba, and the Pitchei Nida. We're getting really fancy here. Let's get even simpler. It's a Mefurish Mishnah. There's a Braita that says this outright. Right? We could discuss Machloket Rishonim's. But when we have a Mishnah that paskins X, that's kind of like, okay, you know, game over. You bring me a Mishnah, that's a good raya. What's the sugya in the Mishnah? The Mishnah discusses a case. What happens if someone's blind? How can a blind person ever paskin their own marashailas? A blind person can't deal. A blind person has a physical inability to paskin nidashailas for themselves. So the Mishnah already says there were people that were blind. Lo aleinu, all across history and humanity. So, but they also have Hilchos Nida. So how can this work? How can you have Hilchos Nida for someone that's blind? There's an inherent aspect of vision that has to involve Nida, right? Both how one becomes Nida, how one's right becomes Tmeya, how one becomes Tahora. Your eyes are an inherent aspect of the process. So the Mishnah tells us that, right? Hacharesh et vashod v'soma, right? V'shenitrefa data, okay? Im yesh lehem pikechet, right? They can do their bedikot. They bring it to this pikachat, this very smart, knowledgeable woman. And then she says it's good or it's no good. And then with that knowledge, not just for Hilchos Nida, but even more so, she could then eat shuma. Let's say her husband was a Kohen. She now wants to eat shuma. Right? There's a whole machloket in Rishonim. Is Hilchos Nida, are we dealing with Nida Lebala, right, between man and wife? Or are we dealing with Inyani Mikdash? Is it Tumen Tahara for the Mikdash? So generally, the Mikdash is going to be more chamor than Labala, right? The whole sheet of the Ravid, three different types of Bediko, whatever, not for now, okay? But point is, there's different aspects of Nida for Bala, for her husband, and for the Mikdash. So the woman is believed to check and to paskin the Nida Shailas for the blind woman so that she can eat the Truma. So of course, how can you come and try and tell me that the woman is not going to be believed to paskin Nida Shailas when we have an explicit Mishnah and a Braita that tells me that the woman's believed to paskin the Nida Shailas for the local blind lady, right? For her neighbor, her good friend, who unfortunately is not able to see. So of course she's believed. Right? And then he says, Rashi says there, Shaita b'kia, b'mare dam tamei v'dam tahor. Rashi says explicitly on that Mishnah, what does it mean? We're dealing with a woman who's very knowledgeable. She has Bekiyas. She knows those 18 Simanim in the Torah, Beit Yosef, Shulchan Aruch. She knows Masechet Nida, or at least the like seven daf over the entire Masechta that's relevant to actually Hilchos Nida and not just in Yonei Tuma and Tahara. Okay? She knows all the poskim. She knows the Darkei Tahara, the Bari HaShulchan, the Tahara to buy it. She's gone through all the, she knows it, right? She knows all the Shailas and Shuvos in the Agros Moshe about Hilchos Nida. She knows all the halacha. Of course she's believed. And this is brought down halacha lemais in the Torah of the Shulchan Aruch. That what does a blind person do with Hilchos Nida? Her friend comes and checks her bedikot. She doesn't need to go to the rabbi with every bedika. She could just knock on her neighbor's door and say, hey, you know, have sektara, bedika shivinakiyim, etc. And her friends believe, like, she doesn't need to go to the rabbi with everything. It should be noted that there are, many Hasidim who have a minhag that the women are not believed at all with any of their own bedikot, and they go to the rabbi before they go to the mikvah with all of their bedikot from all of Shiva Nikiyim, and he basically says either all good or no good. That's a minhag in certain Hasidic communities, definitely not the mainstream opinion in the modern Orthodox community at least, or at least that I've come across, but that does exist out there, and they definitely will not take an opinion that Yotzer HaLachar are allowed if they won't even allow her to paskin, or like, arguably it's not even psak when dealing with one's own shiloh. Maybe have say tara is because it's a chazaka to shift from dine tuma to dine tahara. Maybe have say tara is a little bit different, but let's not get into that right now. Okay, continuing down in the shiloh in the tshuva of Rabinovich. Okay? So now we end up, so seeming that Rabinovich is saying, women for sure can paskin. But where do we get stuck? We get stuck on the third answer of the Ramban. What was the third answer of the Ramban? Anyone remember? Exactly. Because of Kvod and Talmidei Chachamim, she wouldn't paskin. The respect of the Chachamim, she wouldn't paskin. So now what do? Yotzer HaLachar, they're taking the mantle of the rabbinic leadership, and they're smashing it, and they're taking it with them to the Ezra's Nashim. What could be worse than that? Okay? They're running away. Exactly. Okay? So what do I do about Kavod Talmidei Chachamim? It's the Ramban, right? The Ramban is one of the Gedolei Rishonim. Okay? Rav Rabinovich says absolutely brilliantly here. Right? The minute she believes herself, then maybe, and she's believed, but that's going to offend, that's not going to be Bishum Kavod Talmidei Chachamim, and then maybe the woman, she could paskin for herself, but she can never paskin for her friend, because that's going to cause a communal upheaval, where the rabbi is then being negated from his job, and it's also being, it's not just knocking him out of his job, but it's pogay in his kavod, right? You have the rabbi of the shul, and everyone says, oh, don't ask the rabbi, go to that lady over there. She said, you know, in the corner of the Ezra's Nashim, she's the Nida person. It's like, that's going to be offended. It's the rabbi's shul, he's the posik, he's the Mar Da'atra, and now you're going to say, like, oh yeah, it's like, oh yeah, don't go to the rabbi, ask your kashrus questions to Shimon over there. What does Shimon know? He reads like the OU kashrus blog that they send out, like the OU Dafa kashrus. Like that doesn't, like, right? It's you don't necessarily, this is part of what we'll get to it in a little bit, but you're also working on the assumption that, you know, every Yotzer HaLacha is more knowledgeable than their community rabbi. There's plenty of cases where there's Yotzer who know more than the rabbi, and there's communities where the rabbi knows more than the Yotzer.
So if the rabbi actually knows more than the Yotzer.
But what about the comfort zone? People feel more comfortable asking another woman their Nida Shilas? Whatever, that's part of the discussion. So let's get back into Rav Rabinovich's answer.
What? No, okay.
Great. Okay? Biram Yeridu HaDorot. And he says, over the generations, right, there's this concept of Yeridu HaDorot, things have changed. V'ke'et, lo rak she'ein nashim ra'ot b'ze kavod chachamim l'shol mehem b'inyanei damim, ela b'du ka'avech. He said, people, right, things have changed. People don't say, oh, it's in the rabbi's kavod that I go ask him my shaylas. It's amazing. I'm going to go bring the rabbi my mara shaylas. It's the most gishmak. Kavod Talmidei Chachamim is walking in and asking them shaylas in Hilchos Nida. Like, that is the definition. No. Maybe, like, kiss his hand, say a bracha for Talmidei Chachamim, not if you're Ashkenazi or Corona. But let's just assume, right, there's things you stand up when they walk in the room. You know, maybe you sing like a song when they walk in, they start speaking. Great. I'm just saying general kavod chachamim things, but really all of them apply only to Sephardim. We could discuss, you know, sociologically where, why, and how that changed. Ashkenazim and kavod talmidei chachamim is more or less non-existent, but that's a different issue. Sephardim are just like, obviously, who's greater than like Maran? But okay, continuing. Okay, so he says, not only that is it not the kavod of Talmidei Chachamim, but that the women are embarrassed to ask the Talmidei Chachamim the shaylas. Not only that, he brings a Gemara, right? One of the reasons why, right? Lama lo she'ala yalta et ba'ala, Rabbi Nachman. Right? The Tosafot asked this question. Yalta's husband was Rabbi Nachman, one of the G'dolei Hatanaim in his generation. Why didn't she just ask her husband her shaylah? Why did she go to these two different rabbis? She could just go, hi husband, I had a quick shaylah for you. Right? So there's different answers brought down in the Rishonim on that. But the answer, the mainstream answer, is Vitiritsu Shechashesh Shalotit Gane Bifanav. She was afraid that her husband's going to be like disgusted. Oh, you're showing me your like your bloody shilas. Like, that's weird. And her husband's going to then be, you know, disgusted. He's going to be turned off. And he's like, okay, you're a weird Yalta. Stay away from me. Okay? So Rav Rabinovich says, maybe in our generation, it's not only Kamot Tamei Chachamim, but it's going to be considered embarrassing, weird, socially odd, off, and awkward to go to ask the rabbi, you're Nida Shilas. So Rav Rabinovich says, maybe the Kamot Tamei Chachamim in our generation is not asking them the Nida Shilas. Right? Some rabbis are totally cool with Nida Shilas. Some are like, I know someone who's been a rabbi for 15 years, and he's like, every time I get a Nida Shaila, there's like part of me that's like, this is an odd part of my job. Right? Like, this is like, if you knew that when you were like 18, going into like, you know, I'm going to be a rabbi, maybe you would have like reconsidered. Okay? Let's continue with the tshuva. We'll take questions at the end, okay? Just because we're a little over time, we want to go through it, and people who have Shailas will entertain Shailas and discussions after. Okay? So he says, not only that, right? Besides from maybe the kavod Tamei Chachamim has changed, we've shifted, and now maybe it's embarrassing, awkward, or, you know, not so mechubad to ask them shailas. But there's women who, as a result of this not being comfortable, this awkwardness, this sort of, you know, this weird feeling of going and asking the rabbi they need a shailas, they decide not to ask shailas. They're better off not asking shailas. Within this, I asked my wife before, she said definitely goes both ways. As a result of not asking shailas, some women are overly machmer on themselves. I'll never ask a shaila because it's awkward, it's uncomfortable. So I'll just always be machmer, right? Koch d'atera adif, as the Gemara tells us in a few places, right? It's really, you need to be a bigger Talmid Chacham to be Mekel. But everyone could just be machmer. Like, I don't lose anything by being machmer. Yeah, except for you just went 7 months without going to the mikvah because you were just like, oh, maybe that's tamei. What do you mean maybe it's tamei? That's not normal. I'm just making up a number. Right, so some women were overly machmir because they were uncomfortable asking shailas, and some women were just like, well, we're not going to ask shailas because this is weird. So they basically just said, to heck with it, I'll pick and choose, do what I want. So you had some women who were way too machmir, some women who just basically dropped the entire halacha more or less and did what they decided. And as a result, it's not only that it's kavod tamei chachamim, but they just weren't asking shailas. It's like, you ask different, you know, this is at least Rabbi Adler from Tina Kray strongly holds this and many others as well, that communities with Yatzot, they say the rabbi doesn't get less shailas, but when combined, there's significantly more questions being asked. Questions that people might not have felt comfortable asking in the past. If there's a yoetzet, there's a woman who they could talk to, they'll feel more comfortable asking, so the number of questions as a whole only goes up. That's part of the tanoit. It's not pogeya and kavod tamei chachamim, but rather people weren't asking. So now it's either nobody asks, or at least they ask, but they're asking the yoetzet instead of the rabbi. So it's better that they should ask somebody who's knowledgeable, and part of a yoetzet's job is if there's a very difficult case, right? Most yoetzot that I've spoken to say, well, without a doubt, when they have complex shailas, they ask the rabbi. They don't pass, they have paskin in very clear cut, Rav Moshe paskin's X. Rav Shlomo Zalman says Y. Oh, the Shulchan Aruch says X. Oh, that's what happened? You have to go back to the mikvah because that's chotzeitz. You don't have to go back to the mikvah. Oh, that's the case. You could be tola on a, you know, things that are clear-cut, they paskin on. And that's not called psak. That's called maramakum. That's an igros Moshe. I'm not paskinning when I say that's an igros Moshe. I'm not paskinning when I say, oh, the Bar Yishulchan says this. The Aruch HaShulchan says that. The Sidrei Tara says this. The Chavos, right? Machloke Chavos Das no to be Yehuda. And Rav Shlomo Zalman holds like the no to be Yehuda. Right? That's not me paskinning a shaila. That's me just telling you, Rav Moshe said this. Right? That's not any, that has nothing to do with me. Paskinning a shaila is a much more complex, you know, getting in and at it. Okay? So as a result, Rav Rabinovich continues, it will be much more comfortable for the woman to go to a yoetzer halacha, someone who they trust, they feel more comfortable, and she's knowledgeable in the areas of Nida, right? They feel much more comfortable. They don't feel like it's not embarrassing. It's not kind of awkward for her. Okay? And he then says, not only that, the Sefer HaChinuch mentions, this is on your Makoro sheets, that the Sefer HaChinuch already says in the Taz of Beis HaMikdash, right, when it comes to not paskening shilos when you're drunk, the Sefer HaChinuch says in the Mikdash, that applied, right? Right? B'chol makom, b'chol zman b'zcharim, v'chein b'isha chachama haruya l'harot. It applies for men. It also, the Sefer HaChinuch, right? We're talking around the 1500s. We don't know exactly who wrote it, but we assume around the 1500s, I believe. Maybe a little bit earlier, I could be wrong. But The Sefer HaChinuch already says there's these very bright, smart, knowledgeable women who are passing mishaylas. So Rabbanovich says, clearly there's a history of women passing mishaylas. He brings in his footnote that in many communities in Tayman, back in Tayman, in Yemen, there were these older women, right? Yishod skenot, shayu muchzakot kibikiyot bin enemara. Right, in Tayman, the women were the ones passing in Marot. And that was the Masorah all throughout the generations, that the women were the ones who passed in Marot. And then to sum up, Rav Rabinovich basically brings things back, and he goes back to general Psak. As we mentioned before, there's two types of Shailas. There's a Shaila which is very, very clear-cut, right? The Shulchan Aruch says X, the Ramah says Y. Okay? Right? You ask a Shaila. Can I sit on the same bench as my husband when I'm in Nida? Yes or no?
Depends on if it moves.
So let's assume it moves it, right? Let's say it's one of these swings, right? What do you call it?
A porch swing.
A porch swing. So if you ask me that, Shaila, can I sit on a porch swing with my husband when I'm in Nida? What am I going to ask you? Are you Sephardi or are you Ashkenazi? Okay? Sephardim, the Shulchan Aruch says, doesn't even mention it. Rav Avadia says mutter. You ask me if you're Ashkenazi, I'll say the Ramah Paskins, that you can't. Okay? I don't need to be a posek. What did I just tell you? I just told you that there's a Ramah in Kuf Tzadi Hey Gimel or Dalet, I don't remember exactly off the top of my head, that says you can't do X. I don't need to be a Gadol Ador to Paskin, that Shaila. I'm just telling you a very, very clear-cut issue.
It's all psak that we have nowadays.
Correct.
Psak.
If you ask me what bracha do I make on an apple, and I say, oh, that's a ha'et. Am I a posek?
No, but if I ask you a crazy question that you can just pull out sperm and show me all the sources, that's also not psak.
Correct.
Tell me what to do according to, like,
correct. Everyone. I mean, it depends on how crazy the case is. We're going to get to that in a second. So that's case A. And then Rabinovich says at the end, in the second, so case A is where I just say, oh, this is what it says.
Yeah.
Right? Right, you asked me, right, we discussed this the other night, right? I don't remember how it came up, right? How do I need to cover my hair around my house when I'm in Nida? So I'll say the Shevet Alevi says yes. And Rav Moshe says if you generally are not makbet to cover your hair around your house, then you can. Okay? Did I just paskin a shayla? No, I told you what the Shevet Alevi said. I told you what the Igros Moshe says. In our community, generally, the minhag, I don't know. I mean, I have never asked anyone, but I don't believe most people in the modern Orthodox community cover their hair when they sleep and when they're nida, because that's how the Shevet Alevi paskins. I find that hard to believe, but you know, I could be wrong. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, great. So point is, that's not me paskining a shayla, that's me telling you this is a machloket Shevet Alevi Igros Moshe, and it seems to me the mainstream opinion would be the Igros Moshe here. Okay, at least in our tzibur. Okay, but there's other questions, and that's also going to be the case with Marot. Marot, there's cases that are very clear-cut. That's Tahor, that's Tameh. Different colors. That's no Tel Adam, that's not no Tel Adam, right? Okay? Right, different cases across the color spectrum. What's going to be okay l'kuleyama? What's going to be not okay l'kuleyama? What's going to be a debate? Right? What do I hold on yellow? Oh, the Chacham Adam says yellow for a half sektar is no good. Shev Nikiyam is fine. Okay? I don't need, right? That's a bigger debate. Doesn't matter for now. So that's case A. Case B, or as we mentioned, there's really complex shailas that come up, and now I have to be a diamond milta la milta. You asked me a very complicated question. I can say, there's an Igros Moshe that's close. It's not the exact case, but it's similar. And I need to know much more breadth in Hilchos Nida, not just in Hilchos Nida, in Kol Torah Kula, in order to say, are the cases actually similar? Do they compare A to B? Right? That's going to be, right, classic case example. If I want to paskin a shaila on Hilchos Shabbos about grumma, right, I asked a question the other day, I forgot to put the thermos, the hot water urn on Shabbos mode. Can I take water out of it or not? It's on the heat saving mode. Yes or no? Right? Maybe the thermostat's gonna go on, not gonna go on, etc. That's a Shaila in Grumma. There's a Shaila in Grumma in Hilchos Shabbos, right? And I could have learned Hilchos Shabbos really, really well. But if I've never learned the sugyos of Grumma ben Zikin, all in Bava Kamma, etc., the whole sugyos in Grumma ben Bava Kamma, I have no idea. How do I deal with Grumma b'Shabbos, Grumma b'Nezikin? Do they compare or not compare? This is the main reason why Rav Shechter, for example, is against the Yotzer Halacha. To be in parentheses, Rav Shechter also believes that most rabbis can't paskin shaylos, because Rav Shechter believes you're never allowed to paskin a shayla unless you know Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch and Shas Kol. Right? Rav Shechter believes you can never paskin a shayla unless you know Kol Torah Kula. So that's why he's against Yotzer Halacha, but he's also against most rabbis paskining because they just don't know everything. So you could paskin a shayla and think it's so clear cut, and I'll come and say, well, there's a Tosfos in Yevamos that seems to say otherwise, and you're going to say, well, I've never learned Yevamos, so how are you paskining a shayla? So Rav Rabinovich says, in a case where it's very, very complex, and you need to now compare, is case A the same as case B, or is it inherently different? then you need to ask a Rav. You need to go to someone with much more knowledge, not Yotzer Halacha, or specifically trained in Hilchos Nida. Right? We mentioned before, Shiloh came out with Aviva, right? So last year we discussed after Hilchos Shabbos, someone asked last year in Hilchos Shabbos whether or not they're allowed to remove nail polish on Shabbos. So I, off the top of my head, right, I said, right, the Hilchos Shabbos says it's Mutzal Chachilah, Shmir Shabbos is you can't, but Al Yedei Goy, Letzorech Mitzvah for Tefillah, you can, etc. Right, hold on, look at how do you deal with, can you take off nail polish on Shabbos or not? Discussion not for now. Okay? So I asked Aviva after Shir, right, last year we gave Shir at the same time. So after Shir, I went over, I said, out of curiosity, what is Nishma, what are the Yotzot generally Paskin regarding the Shaila? I mean, I guess no one could call you Friday night. Can I take off my nail polish or not? Because, well, it's a hotline. So that doesn't really help. But in general, what is Nishmas Psak for removing nail polish on Shabbos? And her response was, I don't know, to be honest, because I've never learned Hilchos Shabbos. And that was, she was totally honest about it. She said, it's a great question. I don't know what our Psak is. I haven't properly learned Hilchos Shabbos. So as a result, I don't necessarily know what the Psak would be in that area, even though it's a case that's a clear crossover of nail polish in Chatzitza. And also, nail polish, can I remove it on Shabbos? That's a crossover, and she was being totally honest and upfront and said, I don't really know because I haven't properly learned Hilchos Shabbos before. Right? There's a certain balance that has to come. So, that's dafka, not such a crazy case, but there's cases that are much more complex when we're dealing with a lot more difficult issues, etc. So, Rabinovich says there's two different types of cases, and in those cases, you need to go to a Talmud Chacham who knows much more, who has a much broader grasp of Kol Torah Kula. That's definitely going to be true. But he definitely says then at the end that Dafka, the fact of having Yotzot Halacha, he says, it's not in place of Rabbanim, it's in the rabbi's best interest. It makes the rabbis stronger. It makes the community stronger. This is in the community's best interest. It's not Pogei in Kvodim Tanei Chachamim. This is great for the community. This doesn't even affect the rabbi's Kavod because they weren't asking them Shailas to begin with. Better they should ask, you know, if you want to tell me that every single Shaila that's going to be asked to a Yotzot would have been asked to the rabbi, that would be a discussion. But that wasn't the Metzias, Rav Rabinovich says. Okay? And then he writes at the end, Shevach Gadol Hu L'Rabbanim Sheyatzru Misgeret L'Midit L'Yotzer Halacha. Right? This is a great praise to these fantastic Rabbanim. Right? Rav Henkin, Zecher Tzadok Livracha, was Nifter today. Rav Ror Haftik, Rebetzin Henkin, Rabbanit Henkin. Right? Vayedrichu Otam Be'Lchot HaShchichot. Right? They taught them all the practical necessary halacha, and they taught them how to deal with the proper issues, when to ask Rabbanim, when not to. And they gave them the reshus to help their friends, to make the community better. And in this way, ubederzu hitzlichu liftor harbe bayot. They managed to save so many issues that never would have been asked, so many questions that never were being dealt with. They just saved the day. This is incredible. Kevan shenatnu lehem reshut, they gave him permission. Ein tzichu lachosh od lekvodem. And the minute the rabbi said, Yotzot are allowed to be involved in it, the minute Yotzot are acceptable, then Rav Rabinovich says, that's not Kavod Chachamim because the Chachamim just gave them permission. Kmo shekol more roham, kol more hora'a, mekubal al tzibor shelo matir lorod bereshut rabotav. Right? Just like, right? For example, we have a halacha that you're not allowed to paskin in front of your Rebbe. Right? If your Rebbe's in the room, you're not allowed to paskin shayla in front of him. Different sugya for a different shir. But, okay. No, exactly. If someone asked you a shayla, right? Today I was listening to Shir, right? And it was between Rabbi Glasser, Rabbi Dr. Glatt, and Rav Willig. And Rabbi Dr. Glatt said, I'll discuss all the medicine, but I will not pass on a shayla. Rav Willig's on the same Zoom Shir. He's the rabbi here. I'm not getting involved, right? Because he's my Rebbe. But when Rabbi Dr. Glatt is in his shul and Rav Willig's not there, he paskins the shaylas in the shul, right? So just like you don't need to be worried about your rabbi paskining right? When you're at your own shul, you don't have to worry about paskining in front of your rabbi because they give you reshus. So too with Yotzot. He says, it's not any questions of Kavod Tamei Chachamim. Rav Rabinovich is incredibly, incredibly pro. He thinks it's fantastic. And this is hopefully, I know we went a little bit overboard. I think, I'm sorry about that, but I hope at least this was informative and enjoyable. Hopefully next week we will continue in discussion about whether that woman could pass in Shilas in general, maybe outside of Hilchot Nida. But this is a little bit overview of the sugya of Yotzer Halacha and Rav Rabinovich's incredibly pro and fascinating tshuva, where he really, and when I spoke to Rav Shechter about this the sugya, I asked him, in the sugya of Yotzer Halacha, what's the svar to say it wouldn't be allowed when, like, as Rav Rabinovich points out, like, this is explicit in the Mishnah and the Gemara and the Rishonim. And like lechora, this is what was done, right? All the sugyas in Nidav, right? Yishamet haseket bedamim, right? What does that mean? She's not like, right? She wasn't shechting. She wasn't a moel. Maybe she was, right? Machlok Ramah, Shulchan Aruch, different discussion there. Okay, can a woman shecht or be a moel? But lechora, pshat is, this is what they were doing. Okay? So, point is, there's a lot of really fascinating things to discuss here. Hopefully, Bezrat Hashem, if anyone wants to continue on to be a Yotzer Halacha, ask your Rav how he paskins on the issue. But, definitely an interesting sugya, and Bezrat Hashem this year should be Li'ulei Nishmat, both Rav Rabinovich, who was Nifter a few months ago, and Rav Henkin, who was Nifter this morning, both of whom were really instrumental in getting the Yotzer Halacha program and the actualizing it in the field, really were instrumental in making that happen, and Shiel Li'ulei Nishmatam, Erev Tov.